Girl, listen, it is Mental Health Awareness Month if you're watching this real time. But even if you're watching it well after the month of May, this episode is going to be really helpful for you. We are starting a brand new series called Mental Health is Wealth. And girl, I know you have some questions about diagnoses and what kind of therapist you should see and how in the world do you find a therapist. Honey, I'm about to do a full mind dump. I am going to answer almost all of the questions that I get as a mental health professional in this episode. So let's get through this introduction so that we can dive in. Hey friend, I'm Robin May, and a few of the professional hats that I wear includes being a transformational speaker, a life coach, and a licensed therapist. And personally, well, I'm a wife, a mommy to three girls, and a pastor's wife, just to name a few. Girl, I'm over here doing all the things while trying to stay in shape and keep my skin clear. But the truth is, I don't want to be known for being busy. I think that's a scheme that somebody set up. No, I want to be known for living a life that is in perfect alignment with what God intended. And I want to help you do the same. So it's with that in mind, I'd like to welcome you right here to Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. Over here, we're creating a safe space to have real conversations with real women on real topics. This is a judgment-free zone where we can be vulnerable and honest and curious about our lives so that we can elevate not just what we do, but who we are. So if any of that resonates with you, again, welcome to our safe space. This is Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. Hey, friend, welcome to Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. If you are one of my returning sisters, hey, girl, if you are visiting for the very first time, welcome to Intentional Conversations. I am Robin. And listen, if you haven't already subscribed to the channel, if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're listening to this on your favorite podcast app, please subscribe to the podcast there. Make sure you are liking and commenting and sharing. It really, really helps it to move up the algorithm, and your support means so much to me. Listen, I love when you guys comment wherever you're watching it. Leave a comment, or you can head on over to my Instagram and DM me, girl, because I love to hear your takeaways and your ahas from our conversation. And baby, we are about to dive in. We are in the beginning of a brand new series called Mental Health is Wealth. If you're listening or watching this in real time, this is the month of May, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And honey, I have so many things on my notes to talk to you about because I am often asked the questions I am going to address today. I am going to share almost like a mind dump of all the things that come up, questions from my family and friends, questions from clients. We're going to even talk about some diagnoses so that you can understand how that works. I'm going to give you some strategies on how to manage your mental health. Girl, we're going to define mental health. And I have it in my notes, but I'm debating whether or not I'm going to tackle something that came up in pop culture, social media. So here's the deal. I don't often address pop culture things, like things that happen on reality TVs or pop culture celebrities. I don't often comment about it publicly on social media. As a matter of fact, if you go back to the series we did in February, I think it was on dating. Yes, it was on dating. If we go back to that series, I actually did a video about the Netflix show Love is Blind, and that was the first time I'd ever done anything like that and actually talked about my perspective on a couple of the cast members. And the reason why I don't is the world is very small. And listen, I take my role and my calling very seriously. And I'm always cautious after some wisdom from one of my very best friends. I just never know who God might have me counsel, coach, or cover spiritually. Y'all like that? I like that. Counsel, coach, or cover. Baby, somebody DM that to me so I won't forget. I just never know who God might call me to support in that way. And I don't want them scrolling through social media being able to say, oh, she has some opinions about me. But with that said, you see me taking a deep breath. With that said, something has come up in social media about a celebrity, and I think I want to address it. I actually put it in my notes when I was preparing, but I just don't want, I don't want to ever make someone feel bad. We'll see. We'll see. All right. So again, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And so we're covering all of that. We're covering all of that. Okay. So let's just dive right in. This is going to be like a mind up. It's been a minute since it's just been the two of us, right? Because I have had, last series, we talked about Mind Your Money. And I had three of my girlfriends come in. Wasn't it just three? It was three of my girlfriends came in to came to the podcast to share about making our money work for us, getting our money mindset right, dealing with scarcity. Honey, if you have not listened to those episodes, go back, because those are some bad girls. They are some bad girls. And then coming up over the next 3 weeks, I'm going to have two of my colleagues and friends come on. Then one of my girlfriends, who I have known for many, many years, she started out as one of my little sisters, and it has transitioned into us just being really good friends. My daughters adore her. And we're going to talk about her mental health journey. So all of that is coming up on this series, but let's dive in. Okay. So let's just start out by talking about what is mental health. What is mental health? Well, I like to define mental health just as our total wellness. Our total wellness. Mental health is us being well physiologically, mentally, spiritually, physically, cognitively. Ooh, I didn't put this in my notes. Please, y'all, remind me to talk about cognitive distortions. I did not put that in my notes, and I'm going to forget. If I forget, somebody DM me, and I'll talk about it in one of the episodes with my other friends who will be coming on. Okay, so mental health is your total wellness, right? And I like to remind all of us that we really are mind, body, and spirit. Mind, body, and spirit. Can I talk to my church folks for a minute? Can I talk to my people of faith? If you are a person of faith and you're looking in scripture, you'll often find mind, body, and soul. Mind, body, and soul. And that is because from what I have gathered, when I am saying mind, body, and spirit, actually, your spirit and your mind from the perspective of the Word of God are combined, and then there is your soul, right? So mind, body, and soul. But however you want to define it, we are mind, body, and spirit. We are three parts. And hear me. I want you to, this is going to be one of those episodes where I want you to take notes. I want you to grab your journal. I have been begging y'all to get an Intentional Conversations journal. Grab your journal, because I want you to write this down. How do you honor, how do you care for, how do you tend to your mind, your body, and your spirit? If you are not tending to all three, more than likely you are bootlegging your life. Do y'all remember back in the day, how many of you are around my age? Don't ask me how old I am. But how many of you who are around my age remember back in the day when the television was staticky, our parents would do what? They would either hit the TV, yes, I know they would hit it, or they would put foil on the antenna because that helped to get it a bit more reception. We were bootlegging the TV. How many of you are like me, you had old school parents, so if the table was wobbly, they weren't about to go buy a new table. They would fold up a paper towel or fold up some foil. We used foil for everything. Baby, can I get some stocking foil? Can y'all reach out to my girlfriends who just were on my Mind Your Money and ask them, should I invest in some foil, baby? Because we use foil for everything. And so they would ball up or fold up a paper towel or foil and put it under the leg of the table or the chair so that it wouldn't be wobbly. We were bootlegging the table or the chair. Many of us are bootlegging our well-being. Many of us are bootlegging our mental health. What do I mean? We aren't tending to mind, body, and spirit. Some of you pay a lot of attention to your intellect, to how you're processing, but you pay no attention to your physical health. Some of you make sure that your physical health is in line, but you're not taking care of your spirit. Some of you only focus on your spirit. You're going to go to church, but you are not going to challenge the way you think. You're not going to take care of your body by being careful how you eat. We are mind, body, and spirit, and your mental health is encompassing all of that. Baby, that was good. My daddy used to tell me that you do not blow your own horn. Is that what he used to say? Don't blow your own horn. Did my daddy say that? I can't remember exactly how he said it. Don't toot your own horn. That's what it was. But I'm toot too. My girlfriends always say, oh, Robin, you go toot toot. Toot toot, because baby, that was good. Oh, y'all need to rewind that. Or you need to send it to somebody and tell them to listen from this point to this point. So that is our mental health, right? So again, we're mind, body, and spirit. And what's so interesting when you begin to understand mental health and you even begin to dive into disorders, remember I talked about we are mind, body, and spirit. There are even diagnoses. One is called somatic disorder and one is called conversion disorder. And I'm not going to go into those because they can get a little bit complicated because they are both very much connected, somatic disorder and conversion disorder, but they both are connected to how we are processing thinking and that impact it's having on our physical body. You can have actual physical symptoms based on the way you are thinking. And it's not that people are faking, but that is a real diagnosis, a somatic disorder or a conversion disorder. I don't know if you are familiar with this, but often people will go, this happens to me all the time. People will go to the emergency room because they think they're having a heart attack, and the doctors will run all the tests and the doctors will say, no, you're not having a heart attack. You're having maybe a panic attack, or you're just having extreme anxiety. You need to go see a therapist. And then the client will come and see me and say, I was in the hospital, or I went to the hospital, or I went to the ER because I was having such physical symptoms. They're not making up the physical symptoms. The physical symptoms are real. Their body is just reacting to the overload that's going on in their mind. We are mind, body, and spirit. And so our mental health is critical to our total wellness. And that's why I'm doing this series, Mental Health is Wealth. Because here's the truth. You can have all the money, you can have the positions, you can have the connections, but if your mental health is not well, none of that is going to matter. And so I want us to really dive into this. And people often ask me, Robin, how do I know if I have a mental illness? How do I know? So I'm going to start by giving you a little bit of psychology 101. So psychology is simply the study of mind and behavior. But here is the challenge. Most of the time, we don't pay attention to how we feel or what we are doing until it starts to interfere with our lives. Oh my God, I have so much to share. Even as I'm saying this, there's so many things I didn't put in my notes, so I'll have to remember to come back to it. Most of the time, we don't pay attention to what we feel or what we are doing until it starts to interfere in our lives. And I think that is a mistake. I think that's a mistake. And that's why, shameless plug, I'm going to share this again in a minute, but shameless plug, that's why I want you to sign up for Bite-Sized Breakthroughs for Busy Women. I know I keep talking about it. It's coming soon. Head over to robinmayonline.com/breakthrough, because what I want you to do is make prioritizing your mind, body, and spirit a way of life for you. I want you to make it a way of life. And that's what's going to happen in Bite-Sized Breakthroughs for Busy Women. Sometimes I'm going to share with you a principle. Sometimes we're just going to have a prayer. Sometimes we're going to just talk about going to exercise. It's just going to be quick snippet videos. I didn't mean to go this long, y'all. Quick snippet videos for you to listen to help you have something to focus on for that week. Shameless plug. But again, people don't normally start to talk about needing to see someone for their mental health until what they are feeling or what they are doing is starting to impact their work, maybe impact their relationships. Girl, if it's impacting their money. And back in the day, nobody, well, that's not a fair statement. Back in the day, it was rare for people to publicly talk about going to see a counselor or a psychiatrist. I did not know that people who were diagnosed with some type of diagnosis way back in the day, and they would get some help, maybe from the government. People used to call it a crazy check. Y'all, I did not know that until I came into the field. I had no concept of that. That people who would have a diagnosis, and if they got any financial assistance because of it, people would say, oh, they get a crazy check. Why in the world would somebody seek help if they think it's going to be correlated with being crazy? And especially people of color. Listen, people of color were not seeing a therapist. Y'all know what we were taught. What happens in my house stays in my house. I wonder if I told my girls that. I'm going to ask them, have I given them that idea? What happens in my house stays in my house. And there is some truth to that. So I probably have said that. But that sentiment also can be dangerous because people aren't getting any help. Or back in the day, we were told to talk to a preacher. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. We were told to go talk to a preacher. Somebody just needs to pray over you. You better have Deaconess Jones come in there and pray for you. Or I love the memes. I mean, it's not funny, but it kind of is. The memes that said back in the day, if I told my mother I was depressed, she would say, depress them dishes. That's not funny. But it's funny to me because that was so true. We weren't talking about depression back in the day. But now it is a very common conversation to talk about going to see a therapy. Therapy or having a therapist is a trend at this point. And I think that's a problem too. I'm going to come back to it. But if I had to choose which end I would want us to be on, I would definitely choose for us to be on the end of therapy being prevalent, because it not being prevalent is dangerous. Let me stop here and tell you that all of this information is just educational purposes. You feel free to follow up with your therapist, to ask your therapist if she or he agrees with what I'm sharing. Make sure you talk to your own doctor. Listen, I am not your therapist. And if I am, honey, what we're talking about here, we'll just talk about it in a session. So I just have to put that disclaimer out there. And it's somewhere also on all the pages where you find this podcast. Okay, so I talked about the fact that therapy was just not something, seeking help was not something that people necessarily do. I don't have this in my notes, but I'm going to pause here. I'm going to come back to talking about whether or not, or how to discover or how to determine if you have a mental illness. I'm going to come back to that. But first, I kind of thought maybe it'd be interesting to know how I even came into the field. Again, I had no concept of therapy, really. A family member when I was growing up did go to therapy. And I feel like I had to go at least once, but that wasn't prevalent. It wasn't an active ongoing thing. Fast forward, I come to Atlanta for college and I major in mathematics. Don't worry about it. Don't y'all even worry about that. Y'all are distracted. I major in mathematics. I graduate from college. I start working. I worked at a payroll company called Aegis. And then did I work anywhere else? I used to work for the Social Security Administration. I bet y'all didn't know that. Little known fact. When I do a giveaway about little known facts and I ask what is one of the most random places I worked, make sure you say Social Security Administration. I was a G4. Was I a G4? Those of you who work in government, somebody give me, I'll take a government job today. Somebody have a government job? I will take a government job today. I know my clients are like, no, you won't. Okay. I'm distracted. So I end up working in full-time ministry, and how I kind of came into the field is I remember I had a purple couch in my office and I just had a knack for connecting with people. People would come in my office, sit on that couch, and we would go deep very quickly. I would probe and ask questions. We would just have really deep conversations. And I remember the bishop where I worked would walk by and say, Robin, I am not paying you to be a therapist. And he was right. He was not paying. He was paying me to write some letters, right? But it started to spark something in me. Well, there was a period of time, and that's another long story, but there was a period of time when I had no clue what I wanted to do for a living. So I made finding out my purpose and my calling like a part-time job. I pursued that information and I began to realize I had a passion for helping people navigate their life. So I ended up going back to school, getting my master's in professional counseling, and here we are. Hey girl, did you know any of that? Okay. So people don't normally seek out help, or they didn't. Now it's more common. Now, another thing I was about to say is I do have people now who come to counseling and they really don't have a specific thing that they're needing support with. And I remember early on in my career, that was very difficult for me. Now, not so much, but it was very difficult for me because I'm like, so what are we talking about? But I guess now with the many years of experience I have, I've been in this field now 17 years, I can just start asking a couple of questions, baby. And very soon, do y'all know that song? We are going to see the king. Okay, all right. But soon and very soon, I will know what they need to deal with, right? So that's kind of how it has worked. All right. So when it comes to figuring out if you have a mental illness, I would prefer for that question to be rephrased. I would like for people to ask, listen, what are the experiences that I'm having? And does that mean I'm having challenges with my mental health? See, there's a stigma with the word illness. So I try very hard to stay away from that. I'm very rare that you will hear me say that somebody has a mental illness. It's very rare that you're going to hear me say that. I am probably going to say something along the lines of they're having challenges with their mental health. And quite frankly, I often normalize all of this by saying something that I personally believe. Now, you may not be able to Google this. You may ask your therapist, and your therapist may not agree with it. But I personally believe that all of us are on the spectrum of something. And I'm going to explain that in just a few minutes. We are all on the spectrum of something. So while I might not be able to be diagnosed clinically with this thing, I am on the spectrum of something, and so are you. And so once we understand that, I believe that takes away some of the stigma. There are actual diagnoses that, I know y'all are listening. Some of those of you who are listening, you don't see what I'm doing. Those of you who are watching do see what I'm doing. I have to make a note to talk about this because you guys are going to be so mad if I don't. So I'm putting this note for myself because I won't forget. I won't remember. All right. See, we just over here chilling. I'm gonna put it right here so that I don't forget. Ooh, y'all, if I forget this, y'all are gonna talk about me. Okay. So there are actual diagnoses that we can pinpoint when somebody is experiencing challenges with their mental health. So how is that determined? How do we determine what somebody's diagnosis is? Well, mental health professionals use what is called the DSM. The DSM, and that stands for the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. If you're watching this, you see me looking down because I always get it confused. It's the DSM. There have been several versions of the DSM, and we are now on version 5. What is the DSM? The DSM is like our Bible. I wish I had mine in here. The DSM is, if y'all remind me, if you DM me, I will post a picture or a video of the DSM book in my stories. So just say, Robin, I'll listen to your podcast. Can you post a picture of it? It's a big Bible. You can Google DSM-5, but it's a really thick book, and it has all of the diagnoses that exist as far as what researchers have found. And as mental health professionals, we are trained to use the DSM to identify what is this diagnosis that this person has. So, for example, if you come to me and you tell me, Robin, I have been feeling really lethargic. I find myself isolating a lot. I am very tearful. I'm easily agitated. I'm having a really hard time concentrating. I am having little to no motivation. Then listen, in my head, I'm saying 1, 2, 3. I'm thinking through all these symptoms that you're giving me. And then I'm going to say, well, tell me, how long has this been going on? It's been going on for at least 3 weeks. Okay. And how often is this coming up? Almost every day. I'm feeling like this almost every day. So now I'm listening to that. And I know, and because I've been doing this long enough, I know that all of those are enough criteria for a certain diagnosis, right? So that's what happens. You are listening to the symptoms. And if it's some symptoms that you are not as familiar with, you may have to do some research to make sure. So for example, I don't know this to be exact. So for my colleagues who are mental health professionals, do not come for me. I don't know if this is, I'm just doing this off the top of my head. Let's say for major depressive disorder, there are 12 symptoms listed in the DSM. Let's say that there are 12 symptoms listed. And let's say that the DSM says that the person needs to have 8 of those 12 symptoms over the course of 2 weeks with a severity of this amount. Then I'm listening to you, seeing if what you're telling me is matching what the DSM says. Okay, so that's how we identify diagnoses, right? And so again, mental health professionals use the DSM for a diagnosis. Okay, this is something else that's not in my notes. And I might post this on Facebook. When I was being trained as a therapist, I promise you, I was trained in the streets, baby. I don't know how, you know, because back in my day, you know what the old folks say? I don't know how these new therapists are being trained, and no shade to them, because they have some insight on diagnoses that I don't have insight on, because the field is constantly evolving. Remind me to talk to you about that too. But back in my day, in all seriousness, I was trained in a agency that supported people who had a dual diagnosis. They had an addiction diagnosis and they had some mental health or mental illness diagnosis. But what is interesting is, and I was trained under one of the best, I promise you, his name is Dr. O'Brien. Hey, Dr. O'Brien, I miss y'all. I miss that whole experience. It was life-changing for me. It really, really grew me up. My supervisor was my girl, Christina. Hey, girl. She was my supervisor throughout all that time. And supervisor is not just like the person telling you can take work on or off. This is the person who is helping you develop as a therapist. But what we used to have to do, if I did intake on a client who was coming into our treatment program, I would have to sit with that client and do a psychological evaluation. I would have to get all of their history, all of their information, including what symptoms and what symptoms they are presenting with. And then I'd have to take those symptoms and identify what their diagnosis is. But it didn't stop there. Then we would have, either I would do it with my supervisor, or I would do it with Dr. O'Brien, or we would have what's called morning rounds. And so morning rounds, it is my turn. And they say, Robin, all right, you have a client coming in, share what, present your client. So this is, it's a little bit like Grey's Anatomy now that I think about it. I have lived so many lives. I have never connected that, but it's a lot like Grey's Anatomy. So I come and I say, well, I have Sally Sue, and Sally Sue has shared that this, this, and this, and she's dealing with this, this, and this. I have observed this, this, and this. Her affect was this. Her presentation was this. I'd have to do all of that. And with that, I believe Sally Sue is dealing with this diagnosis. Well, baby, the people in the room would say, yeah, I mean, it could be that, but it could also be this, or what about this? And I'd have to justify why I believe the diagnosis I identified was correct, or say, okay, well, I'm not sure. Maybe it is that. So ask your therapist, have you ever done morning rounds? I'm just joking. Don't ask your therapist, because I don't want no clients coming for me, and I don't want to send no clients coming for your therapist. I'm just joking. So that's how the DSM works, right? Now, there are different types of mental health professionals. You have what I am, which is a licensed professional counselor, and even under an LPC, which is what I just said, there are many different types of LPCs, right? And we all have different specialties. how you identify what your specialty is several ways. Number one, training is the main way. Training and experience, right? So coming into the field, I probably would have just been more of a generalist, dealing with all the areas, kind of like your primary care physician. But over time, you begin to narrow into a certain area where you have more expertise. So you have licensed professional counselors, you have social workers. Licensed professional counselors and social workers are very familiar, are very similar. I hope that I'm saying this correctly. If I'm not, if there's a therapist or a social worker who believes that I'm not sharing this correctly, let me know and I'll be happy to do a bonus episode. But I understand the difference between an LPC and a social worker is that social workers tend to help clients more with hands-on reality. They do therapy as well, but they also are very connected to the community and can give a lot of connection in the community. You can often hear a social worker saying, yes, I went to the client's house and we did some training on this or some practicing with this, or they followed me to this resource. It's very rare you're going to hear a licensed professional counselor saying that because we're not often in the trenches like that. Now, have I ever been in the trenches like that? Yes. I remember one time I was needed to make some extra money and I was working in with a program where I was going into people's homes and quickly had to stop that. Okay. So LPC, a social worker, then you have a psychologist. My girlfriend, Dr. Tori, is coming on next week and I was trying to make her a psychologist, but she's going to define the difference between a psychologist and her role as a PhD level therapist. But psychologists often do a lot more testing than what a LPC does. And then lastly is a psychiatrist. And a psychiatrist prescribes medication. There are many psychiatrists that also do therapy, but they have the ability to prescribe medication. As an LPC, I don't have the ability to prescribe medication. Do I know about medication? Just a little bit, just from my experience in the field, what my clients have taken, where I've had to work very closely with nurse practitioners. It's another professional. You have nurse practitioners who have a concentration in mental health. So when I have worked in an agency where me and the nurse practitioner work closely together, of course, I knew a lot about medication. When pharmaceutical agencies would come in, they would present about their medications. So I have a working knowledge about it, but I'm not an expert at all, and I can't prescribe a medication. Baby, yep. Can somebody say thank you, Robin? Because I am giving y'all the tea in the mental health field. Okay. Now, I have to go here very quickly. I have to go here. What is the difference then between coaching and counseling? Can somebody do a drum roll? There is a difference between coaching and counseling. And quite frankly, I am both. I am a licensed professional counselor and I am an executive coach. I have gotten trained in both. I have two different paths with both. But I want you to understand that it can be very dangerous for somebody who has not been trained as a licensed or professional therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist, somebody who has not been trained in the mental health field to play therapist. You do not want it. You do not want it. You do not want it. You want to make sure that that line is very clear. So the difference between coaching and counseling, one of the easiest ways that people have said is that counseling deals with your past, coaching deals with your future. I understand that, and I have even shared that perspective before, but it's way more nuanced than that, because as a therapist, I am doing both. I'm helping you deal with back there, and I'm helping you plan for what's coming up. But as a coach, the bottom line is coaches are there to help you identify the roadblocks that are keeping you from progressing, from reaching your goals. They're here, there to give you strategies to help you move forward. If they begin to dwell or delve into your trauma or into just suck it up, you just think positively and that's it, that begins to get dangerous. There are coaches who have taken a couple of trauma-informed classes. And I don't want to, I think when I just said that, that sounded a bit shady. So I want to massage that a little bit. I think it's important for a coach to take some kind of class like that so that they can make sure they're not diving into waters that are beyond their capacity. And quite frankly, even as a therapist who's been in this field for 17 years, there are waters that I can't dive into. On my website, I'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah, I'm gonna hold off. So there, I'll talk about the waters that I can't dive into. And so we all just have to know the limits to our expertise. So the difference between coaching and counseling is that coaching is focused on helping you overcome or identify and overcome obstacles that are keeping you from reaching a goal. Counseling is helping you unpack, to identify, unpack, and deal with the nuances and challenges and trauma and landmines that are impacting your total well-being. Baby, that was good. That was another one that's good. Toot, toot. Somebody, when I post this and you listen, just send me a toot, toot. Okay, friend, I had to interrupt the episode just to remind you. And I know I have been talking about bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women for a minute, but we are so close to getting ready to launch. I have done a focus group asking women their opinion about how we should make this program work. I am finalizing a few more details. I want to make it super easy for you to access and for you to dive in. Bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women is for the woman just like you who wants some insight, some ahas about her own life and her own journey, but she is juggling so many things. She just does not have time right now to really set apart a long amount of time to get the help she needs. And that is where bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women comes in. So head over to robinmayonline.com/breakthrough so that you can be one of the first people to sign up. It's coming soon, girl. Go to the site now. Okay. So where are we going now? So if somebody goes to see a mental health professional, I told you the mental health professional is listening to hear the symptoms that the person is presenting. Now, we're about to get a little technical. Y'all ready? We're about to get a little technical. This would be good for a student who is interested in mental health, but I think this is good for all of us because we need to know. Okay, so you go see a therapist. A therapist is listening to hear your symptoms, and there's access one and access two. So let me explain that to you. Access one is dealing with mood disorders, disassociation disorders, eating disorders. So remember, I said that there are some waters that I can't dive into. Honey, eating disorders is one of those waters that I am not trained or equipped to help somebody navigate an eating disorder. And I have to say that. I have to say, listen, when I do a consultation, I have to say, I'm asking, what is your presenting concern? If you tell me it's an eating disorder, I know that that's beyond the scope of how I can help you. So access one is dissociative disorders, eating disorders, mood disorders. When we talk about dissociative disorders, we're talking about disassociation, depersonalization, that sort of thing. When we talk about eating disorders, you know what that is. When we talk about mood disorders, that's major depression, that's bipolar disorder, that is anxiety. And then you're dealing with psychotic disorders. That's when you're dealing with delusions or schizophrenia. So all of that is under access one. Do I want to go here? Okay. I am not saying, remember, I told you, ask your own therapist, do your own research. I'm just telling you what my experience was. When I was being trained, how I understood it is that access one was mood disorders, things where your mood fluctuates. And those are some of the things that I've talked about. And that medication often can address mood disorders. Okay. We're going to talk about medication in a minute. Then access two are personality disorders. What do I mean by personality disorders? Obsessive compulsive personality disorder. Now, OCD can also be a mood disorder. Obsessive compulsive personality disorder. Narcissistic personality disorder. Borderline personality disorder. Antisocial personality disorder. What's histrionic personality disorder. We're talking about personality disorders. Now, people have asked me what are my thoughts about personality disorders. Now, first of all, I told you what my thought was earlier. I think we're all on the spectrum of something. Remember, I told you how the DSM works and that, let's just say major depressive has 12 symptoms. Mental health professionals do not come from me. I'm not looking at it. I don't know how many at the top of my head. But let's say that there are 12 disorders, and let's just say that the DSM says you need to have at least 10 of those 12 in order to be diagnosed with major depressive disorder. Well, let's say you are reporting to me 8 out of the 12. Well, you may not be able to be clinically diagnosed with that, but honey, you on the spectrum. Honey, you in the realm. Baby, you're very close to it. Well, that's what I feel about all of it. I feel about that about mood disorders and personality disorders, that if I listen long enough, you could be in the realm of something. It doesn't mean you're officially diagnosed, because we're all flawed. Not even flawed. I don't even want to say that. Take that out. Not even flawed. We are all challenged. We all are carrying a lot. We're all navigating these waters. And so all of us are dealing with something. It's just, what is your something? And is your something interfering with your daily life? Let me say it again. We're all dealing with something. It is just the severity of your something. And is your something interfering with your daily life? Is it causing you not to be able to function? Is it causing you to not be able to connect with others? Is it interfering with your daily life? That is when you want to begin to really pay attention. Baby, I'm giving y'all a lot of information. Now, with all of this, let me tell you, church folks struggle with all of this, because we have been dealt cards that say, pray about it. And you should. I want you to. But you can pray and still need a therapist, baby. Because remember, I said we are mind, body, and spirit. And in all seriousness, one of my heart's burdens is to see people who've gone to church Sunday after Sunday. They have run around the church. They have laid at the altar. They've had the pastor or the prayer warrior lay hands on them. They have fasted, and they still are dealing with that same challenge. And they begin to think that it means that Jesus is not real, that the blood does not heal, and they begin to walk away from their faith. It is one of the deepest pain that I feel when I think about the body of Christ. Because I just want them to know. No, the Bible even talks about the fact that we have to allow God into all parts of who we are. We are mind, body, and spirit. And so it's not that the blood doesn't heal. It's that you need to deal with that generational curse. You need to deal with the generational trauma. You need to deal with the fact that your central nervous system is fried. You need to deal with the realities of your brain chemistry being off. No, it's not that the blood doesn't work. You just need to tend to all aspects of who you are, mind, body, and spirit. And so, yes, you need Jesus, and you need a therapist too. All right, so let's discuss a few most asked questions to me. How do I know if I'm sad or really depressed? How do I know if I'm sad, if I'm just sad, or if I'm really clinically depressed? Well, I just broke that down to you. You want to see a professional. Share openly. Don't hide. Share with the professional what your symptoms are. What I'm often listening for is, I'm trying to figure out if this is a clinical depression or if it's a situational depression. What do I mean? Is this clinical? Another way I've used it, I'm not going to say it the way I normally say it. Is it clinical? Is it something that I can actually diagnose, or is it situational? One of the ways you can tell is this: a situation occurred, your mood decreased drastically. The situation improves and your mood improves. Then that's how we can kind of tell, well, it was just situational. Here's the scary part, though. You can deal with enough situations over time that it begins to impact the way your brain functions. And so what started out was just situational. It's been so many situations. It begins to change the chemicals in your brain. And so now we're dealing with clinical depression. So you want to talk to somebody to understand the difference. How do I know if I'm dealing with generalized anxiety disorder? We're listening for how long has it been happening? How pervasive is it? What are those symptoms? How are they interfering with your life? We want to listen to or hear all of the symptoms so that we can see if I'm just feeling anxious right now because of a situation again, or is it because I'm really dealing with generalized anxiety disorder? Do I have just an anxious personality type? We want to talk about that. I think we're going to get into attachment over the course of this series, understanding our attachment styles. If we don't, y'all remind me. See, I done forgot already. I had a note here to talk about something. Oh, I forgot already. I'm going to come back to this. Let me put this right here so I don't forget. Okay. So what is another question? Oh, my gosh. See, I almost didn't go here. Okay. I'm going to go here. There was recently something that came up in pop culture, and there was a multi-talented actress, comedian. She's just multi-talented. She just has so many gifts and strengths. I'm hesitant because I have very strong reactions to this particular person who I don't know. That's what's so interesting. I don't know her. And so I have very strong reactions to her. And there are people who have very strong support for her. And both of those parties, whether you're with me and you have very strong reactions to this particular person, that really says something about you. Or if you're the person who can't see any wrong with her and you just think everything she's doing is right, that says more about you. I'm not going to say her name. DM me and I'll tell you, because I don't want to just put it out there like that. But anyway, I have very strong reactions to her, and I know why. Because I am very, very much about personal responsibility and accountability. And when it appears to me someone does not have that, it is triggering for me. And then when people applaud that and celebrate that, that is triggering to me. But again, that's more about me. But the people who are in total support of this particular person and just doesn't see anything that they do is wrong, it's probably because somewhere in their life they feel disenfranchised or misunderstood. So it is hard for them to see her areas of growth because they are just seeing themselves. But why am I bringing her up? Because some of y'all are like, Robin, if you ain't gonna tell me who she is, why are you talking about her? I'm bringing her up because recently on an interview, she shared that she had been diagnosed with autism. And how she presented it was as if she had been diagnosed by a professional. Well, then later on, she comes out and says, no, she wasn't diagnosed by a professional. She's self-diagnosed. And that people who had a problem with her self-diagnosing somehow were wrong. And even a lot of therapists and some of my therapist groups have had debates about it. Some are totally in support of her. Yes, you can self-diagnose. And others are like, absolutely not. You cannot. There is challenges with getting, as an adult, an autism diagnosis so many of my clients struggle to find someone to help diagnose them clinically with attention deficit. And there is a cost to it. Now, this particular person said $10,000. Where? It is a cost to it. And the cost can be astronomical, but not $10,000 astronomical from my experience. But I brought that up as I was talking about these. Am I depressed? Am I having generalized anxiety disorder? Am I bipolar? Am I autistic? Remember what I told y'all about morning rounds. Diagnoses are so nuanced. They're so nuanced that I think we need to be careful about how we talk about it and how we declare what somebody is or isn't. And so while I understand her desire to get clarity, because my clients come to me all the time telling me what they are. My clients diagnose themselves all the time. I probably diagnose myself all the time. It's just when you have a platform, you have to be responsible with your platform. And I just felt that that wasn't responsible. That could have easily been massaged by bringing on a mental health professional to talk about it or to say, you know, I believe I'm struggling with this, but I don't know. I'm not a professional. So I'm going to bring somebody on to talk about it so that people can understand, like something along those lines. But anyway, okay, so I'm almost done. Am I almost done? Oh, Lord, I done swiped too many times to see if I'm almost done. Okay. So remember I said, let me see. Oh, this is what I wanted to talk about. I don't necessarily like giving blanket statements. I remember I told y'all earlier that I believe that therapy is now trendy and that that concerns me, because every time you look up, you hear a blanket statement. Oh, they bipolar. Oh, he narcissistic. Hey girl, I almost fell out with one of my closest friends many years ago. We used to tussle, baby. We used to tussle. And she was very clear that somebody in her life was narcissistic. And she would get so frustrated with me because I would say, you know, because he is showing some symptoms that are congruent with narcissism. I would say that all the time when I'm talking to my clients who are dealing with challenges in a relationship. I will say, yeah, there are some symptoms that are congruent with narcissism. Or in those settings, I probably say something else. But it's because I think we have to be careful about blanket statements. And we also have to be careful as therapists that we aren't solely validating. We need to validate someone's experience. Don't get me wrong. But I think we need to validate and make sure we're helping people see how they show up, massage how they show up. I often say this to my clients. What you just said is landing with me like this. Now, it doesn't mean that how I'm experiencing it is what it is, but I am a person who is experiencing you. Has anybody else experienced you in this way? Because we want to be a mirror to help people see themselves. And if we're only validating, yeah, they did you wrong. Yeah, then people aren't able to massage their own growth. Okay. So we're almost done. I want to talk a little bit about medication. Again, people of faith struggle with this. I told you earlier that I don't prescribe medication. I am not an expert in medication. I just simply want to be able to tell you the same way we take meds for physical conditions is the same way many people, some people need medication for their mental health. Listen, our brain chemistry, our nervous system, our central nervous system, what has been passed down generationally, many people are white knuckling it through life when they just need something to help level their hormones or level the chemistry, the chemicals in their brain. There's no such thing as a magic pill. You still need therapy. You still need to tend to mind, body, and spirit. But some of what you're experiencing is beyond a good conversation. It's beyond challenging the way you think. Some of what you're dealing with is impacting your nervous system, and you may need some help, sis. So go to the doctor. Ask the doctor for a referral to a psychiatrist. Your primary care physician may be able to prescribe something for you. Your OBGYN may be able to prescribe something for you. Talk to somebody, get some help. You're just fighting through and trying to figure out why it's not fixed or why it's not changing. You may need a higher level of intervention. That was for somebody. There are pros and cons to medication. I have my clients write out a pros and cons list because clients will tell me, Robin, I'm thinking more clearly, but I don't have any motivation on this medication. And it's really a cocktail. The doctors are trying to figure out, okay, this much, not this much, add this. And that can be frustrating. And so you have to ask yourself, are my symptoms bad enough that I need support? And if so, girl, get the support. Okay. Last couple of things. People ask me, does family history play a part in mental health? Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely, yes. Often when I'm doing an evaluation, I'm asking the client, is there a family history of mental illness? And they all tell me, no, that's not fair. They don't all tell me. But what I often hear is, ain't nobody been diagnosed, but such and such, I always had something going on. We don't often know our family history. And don't let me even get into epigenetics and how trauma is passed down. I don't even have time to do that because this is much longer than what I intended. I am ready to talk about what you need to do. I think we are ready to talk about what do I need to do. Okay. Oh, I had one more thing. This is on my sticky note that I wrote. People often are curious about therapeutic approaches. What are the different therapeutic approaches? For example, I am a cognitive behavioral therapist, which means I believe that the way we think directly impacts how we feel, and how we feel directly impacts what we do. If you want to change what you are doing, don't judge your feelings. Your feelings are just there to give you information. Open it up like an envelope to see what it's trying to tell you. Don't judge your feelings. They are what they are. But you want to challenge the way you think. There are plenty of clinicians of color. That's actually an organization. You can actually go there to find a therapist. But clinicians of color, several clinicians of color, push back on cognitive behavioral therapy and a lot of the mainstream therapeutic approaches because they believe it doesn't take into account some of the realities of for people of color. But I personally still subscribe to or ascribe to CBT. But I don't think it's just our conscious thoughts. I think it is our subconscious thoughts and our core beliefs, the story we're telling ourselves. So most of the time in my sessions, we're spending a lot of time getting to the root of what you are telling yourself, helping you to understand just because you think a thought, it doesn't mean the thought is true. Helping you understand how what mama them said are influencing how you're showing up. That's a lot of the work we're doing when I say CBT. But you have cognitive behavioral therapy. You have, what's the popular one? DBT. You have person-centered therapy. There is a new treatment that's called, oh my God, I'm having a brain freeze. What is it called? EMDR is a new treatment. There are many therapeutic approaches. And so you want to ask your potential therapist, what is their therapeutic approach to see if it matches what you are needing? I'm done, y'all. What's my takeaway? After all of this, after we said all of this, what I want you to do, I want you to share this. I want you to share this video, share this podcast with somebody. Listen, I want you to find a therapist. How? Go to my Instagram, Robin May Online. I think it's pinned at the top. 5 ways to find a therapist off the top of my head. If you have insurance, go on your insurance's website to find what therapists take your insurance. Go to Therapy for Black Girls or Therapy for Black Men. Google it. You can find a therapist there. If you're not a person of color, you can go to, or if you are a person of color, you can also go to Psychology Today. You can also go to clinicians of color. Like I said, that's another way. You can ask friends for a referral. You can talk to your church and see if they have a list of referrals. You can ask your doctor, your PCP, or your OBGYN. Find a therapist. I also want you to expand your emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is a 2-lane highway. It's having the ability to articulate what you feel and regulate what you feel. And then also to be sympathetic or empathetic for what others feel, but not responsible for what they feel. I want you to expand your emotional intelligence. Something very easy. Start journaling. Mind dump what you get it out of your head and get it on paper. Get to the root of what you are thinking. Where did that thought come from? I want you to heal your central nervous system. Go outside. Get some sun. Go walking. If you like animals, pet an animal. Do deep breathing, meditate. I want you to do things to heal your central nervous system. One of the things I talk about is creating a wellness strategy. Imagine you're in a hot air balloon and you're being lifted up. You're sitting in the basket, and instead of it being one balloon, let's say that there are 5 balloons. What are the five things you need that are going to help lift you and regulate you? What are those five things? If I say off the top of my head what it would be prayer. It would be exercise, time with people that I love, journaling, and having time to myself. Those are things that keep me level. What are the five or six things that help lift you up to care for mind, body, and spirit? All right, y'all, that is it. I know that that was so much information. I hope that was helpful. I know it was a bit, in therapy, we'd call that psychological or psychoeducation. We'd call it psychoeducation. I know I gave you a lot. Listen, mental health is wealth. I hope this jumpstarts you on a mental health journey for wellness. Listen, we have three more episodes coming up on this topic. If this helped you, will you share it with somebody? Will you let somebody know that we are getting ourselves together over here on Intentional Conversations with Robin May? Hey, friend, listen, I'm super excited that you listened to this episode of Intentional Conversations with Robin May and Friends. But before you go, did you know that my book, Before You Take His Name, is officially available for you to purchase? Just head over to robinmayonline.com/shopbooks. robinmayonline.com/shopbooks. Before You Take His Name gives Christian women 14 questions that you should ask before you say I do. But here's the thing. The book is actually best for those who may be casually dating, or girl, even if you're not dating at all, this is the time to read the book because it will allow you to set a healthy foundation when you start to get serious about somebody that just may be the one. So if you haven't already, head over to robinmayonline.com/shopbooks. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, it's right in the description of this video. If you're watching this on your favorite podcast app, you can find it in the show notes. Or if you're following me on Instagram, you can head over to Robin May Online and click the link in my bio. Listen, girl, if you're married, will you go ahead and order it from one of your single girlfriends? Tell them I told you to send it to them. Again, Before You Take His Name is available for purchase. Go grab your copy.